home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. We're back after kind of a week of crazy events that took place, and you would think that they were, you know, caused by extraterrestrials, but unfortunately I won't have the luxury of blaming my computer woes on ETs, just a bad video card. So midway through our show last week, on Tuesday with Rob Watson, when we were doing our Rated LGBT Radio impromptu show of the month, my computer video screen dies. I'm thinking, well, this is just odd. I had a separate issue the day before, you know, left the computer alone a little bit. Well, it just wasn't going to work. And managed to stumble through the show. I don't know how we got through the show, but we got through the show. The show ended. And I called up Apple. By the way, we're going to be bringing best-selling author Kathy Porter on in just a second, talking about her new book, Escape from Noor. I'm reading through it, and it's awesome. And it's a continuation of her science fiction series, and she's going to tell us all about this. But long story short, took the computer into Apple on Tuesday, and Apple said, you've got 42 people ahead of you today here at the store in Costa Mesa, South Coast Plaza. There's no chance at all that you are going to get in, so come back another day. The first chance I had to come back was on Friday night, on Black Friday. You know, that's the first place I want to go to is a mall. But I went in there, and it's quite nice when you actually have an appointment. I walked right to the front of the line. They got me in and out of there in about 5 minutes, and they said the cost to have it repaired was going to be about $280 after tax. Well, considering that's better than $1,500 plus extras plus sales tax to get a new one, I said, thank you very much. And I said, you know, how many weeks am I going to be without this? And they said 3 to 5 days. Well, you know, 3 to 5 days really means about 6 to 12 weeks. It doesn't ever mean 3 to 5 days. And so I prepared to tell all of my guests this week, we can't have shows, or we can't do call-ins, or we can't. And I was talking to Kathy over the weekend, and I said, Kathy, I don't know how Monday's show is going to work, because if I have to do it from an iPad, I think it's going to work horribly. Plus, I don't get to put all of her fun pictures up of her books and things like that. And so she pinged me earlier today, minutes after I got back from the store. I think it was just, you know, coincidental. And she goes, are we on? And I said, we're on. The computer's working. And so I got to put all of her fancy pictures on the site. You can see her books that you can go and buy on Amazon and all of the good stuff. And I said, you know, why don't we do the show early? It's Black Friday. A lot of people are just kind of like hanging out. We're going to have a ton of people listening from all across the country in the different time zones. They're all freezing their butts off everywhere else. And she goes, I'm game. So I get to the point where I can say, without further ado, I want to welcome Kathy to the show. But I want to say that it's really an honor to have Kathy here today, because I just finished her first book. It's called Earth's Ultimate Conflict. Kathy was on the show last year, and this is what I do with all authors. I always dive at least, you know, a third, halfway through the book, and depending upon what's happening the rest of that night or the rest of the week, I read the rest of the book. And I always enjoy my authors. It's just if I have a ton of authors on in a week, I just usually get to the point where I kind of know what's going on in the book. But it's taken me forever to get through the book, and I've seen Kathy on more than one occasion. I've talked to her several times, and each time I run into her, I seem like, I'm still reading your book, and she must think I'm like the slowest reader in the world. But I keep telling her, though, what I love about her style of writing is she writes with such an ease, and I don't want to call it a familiarity that if you stop at a point in the book, you know, you got to go to sleep or you got to pick up the kids or whatever is going on in your world, and you got to set the book down. Whether it's a day later, a month later, or 2 months later, or whatever, you can pick up the book and easily jump right back into where you were at. You don't need to go back 14 chapters and reread everything because, you know, there's this, you know, crazy things that are going on. It's not like that. Kathy's books are easy to follow, super fun to read, and they're page turners. And so when you go back, it's like, I can't wait to find out what's happening with Rosa, and I can't wait to find out what's happening with Tony, and I can't wait to find out what's happening, because they're like familiar friends. And so over the Thanksgiving weekend, I finished Earth's Ultimate Conflict, you know, about a year too late. And now I'm on page, let me see, where am I? On a page 127 on Escape from Noor. And I haven't been able to get as far into the book in the last couple of days as I'd wanted to, but that's going to be fixed tonight, because after one of the guilty pleasures of having Kathy on at this early hour this afternoon, I'm going to finish reading the book. So when we're done with the show, the first thing I'm going to do is pick up the bookmark and say, okay, let's get to it and find out what happens. But here I am talking. I haven't even had caffeine today, Kathy. That's how excited I am that you're here, and I'm monopolizing everything. Anyway, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate being back on your show, and I so appreciate your enthusiasm about my work.
Well, you know, and I'll tell you, Kathy, I'm not a big science fiction reader, and I'm not a big young adult reader, and you're definitely a science fiction writer, and one of my other recent guests is a young adult writer, and one of the things that I enjoy about your writing is that you write in a way that it doesn't really matter what the genre is. The characters are so interesting that you want to go on whatever journey they're on, and yours happens to be science fiction. And one of the things that I really like about the characters in your book, and I want you to talk about that as we have you here for the hour today, is that you have a lot of really strong women who are sexy, they're smart, they're driven, they are put in situations that are dangerous and compromising, and they are there to I always say, chew bubble gum and kick some tail, and I think that's what your characters do. And I really like where you take them from beginning, and the journeys that you're taking them on. So thank you as a reader. I appreciate that.
I'm so glad you feel that way, because that's one of the reasons I set out to write science fiction. I was just I loved science fiction right from my youth, but there were so many, especially recent science fictions, where you have women that were portrayed so they have like half guys, Michelle Rodriguez. I love her, but she comes off as a guy, and Sigourney Weaver in Alien also came off as a guy. We did see the softer side of her. I think it was Alien 2 when she helped the young girl. But I wanted to make sure what I had were women that reacted the way real women would react, especially when children are involved. And I do involve a lot of children in my book. We have one in particular, Griffin, who actually comes from Los Alamitos, California.
Yeah.
And Griffin is, he's kind of a constant. But we mention all the other human children, and we mention hybrid children. And the women have, many of the women in my book have human children and alien children. And in book one, as you read, they were forced to make a decision of who they were going to care for.
What a hard choice.
And it just shows the humanity and the love that a woman has for even a part alien child. It's still the angst. One may decide to go with the children, and one may decide not to, and to stay home and care for her human children instead. But it was still raw love. They knew that that child was from them and that they desired to care for it. And so the women have such a strong constitution to get through just about anything in order to protect the children.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. I literally, Gara, when people ask me where my ideas came from, my original idea for the series came from a dream. But in beginning the series, I suddenly realized that there was so much more coming from I don't know where that I was writing. I really realized that when I sit and put my fingers on my keyboard, I feel as if the information is downloading into my mind. My imagination just takes off and just starts sending a movie to me, because it's like a movie in my head.
I think that is the coolest description of how people write. But when you're writing things down, do you, even when you go back and edit them or reread it later on, do any of not necessarily the alien storylines, but as far as like the character, the characters themselves, or the their attributes or their values, does does that resonate with any part of you from, you know, your growing up or people that you know, or is this just completely out of the blue?
Well, a little of both. I mean, a lot of it is out of the blue, but some of my my characters are from people that I know. One particular character, which I don't know if you've been introduced to him yet, Verge.
Met Verge yet.
You met Verge? Or
no, I've not met him yet.
You've not met him yet.
Okay.
In your reading, you will meet Verge. And
okay.
Verge actually happens to be a person who I met through my daughter's dance history. She was always dancing, and at a, I believe it was a recital, I met Verge, and Verge was the grandfather of one of the girls that Odessa, my daughter, danced with. And we got to talking. I had a good friendship already with his wife, Barbara, but I had never met Verge. And Verge was the first one that ever made me, and I only had Earth's Ultimate Conflict out. That was the only book I had out at the time. And he was the first person that made me actually feel really excited about being an author.
My gosh.
He just stimulated my soul. It's like, oh, my God. I mean, he was so excited about my book. Sort of like you, Garrett. You make me so proud of what I do. And Verge was the first one that really made me feel that way, outside of my family, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I didn't know that much about Verge. I just ran into him occasionally, and he would always introduce me to grandchildren or anyone he was with, as the famous author Kathy Porter. And I just adored how he made me feel. So consequently, as I was writing Escape from Noor, he just came into my mind as a character.
Wow.
And he is in there along with his wife, Babs. So Verge and Babs Casey are both in the book. And Verge will remain probably a constant throughout the series because he is such a confidant to Rosa DeAngelo.
I love that. And okay, so here's another question I have for you. Now that I've finished book one, I'm well into book two. Okay, so now the real questions come, and you know, I get that you sit down and the story comes to you, and you just write, and you're a muse, and it just comes out, and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
But where do you get these characters' names? And how do you, and I guess the real meat of the question is, you know, you have names that you would find on the planet Noor, and you have names from the Guardians, and you've got names from all of these other, you know, alien species that, you know, we're being introduced to. You know, how did you come up with, you know, names that were going to be like, let's say, planet-specific or galaxy-specific? So you don't have somebody like, oh, that sounds too much like a Gray name, or that sounds like too much like a Guardian name, because, you know, the Guardian would never have a name like that.
That's very interesting you should ask that, because funnily enough, I really don't put a lot of thought into their name because they tell me who they are when they come along. Like, you know, certain names like Yark.
Yeah.
He's a Gray. Yark just kind of strolled into the picture and told me who he was, basically. I mean, as soon as they come into my consciousness that they are going to be a character, it's sort of like they almost introduce themselves. Later on in the book, you'll read about Queen Tor Am Tete. She's from the planet Shay-Galam.
Okay, so I guess that's, I was kind of on board with all these names until we got to the queen, and I'm like, okay, that's just too many apostrophes and consonants and, you know, names that go along here. I've got to ask Kathy about that, because she's just coming into the picture right now, and not a lot of people, well, at least, I think, it's, is it Yark that's not too fond of her?
No, that is King Yug-Ka.
The king does not like her.
He's one of the Goyans.
Okay.
And he is not very fond of Queen Tor Am Tete at all. They have a very different lifestyles. Queen Tor Am Tete on her planet, it's a very sexually open planet, and that is very offensive to King Yuka, who is on his planet Goy, you will marry, and your wife will be you'll cherish her for life. And they live long lives. But when they take on a mate, they take on a mate forever. And they honor them and cherish them. And when women come in to play from his, well, from just about anywhere, Goyans are very, very, have a very strict code for women. Women that are, that aren't crude, like he believes Queen Tor Amtete is. So he just admires and loves all women. He, in fact, I think you may have already read about, oh yes, in Earth's Ultimate Conflict, you would have read about how the Goyans greet women. You put out your hand, and he takes your hand and goes down, and you think he's going to kiss your hand, but he actually takes a little nip of it.
Right.
Gives it a little bite. And when President Unger withdrew her hand and said he bit me, he was kind of like shocked. But I believe it was not York, but Odom who said, it's okay. That's how a Goyan will honor you. You are so beautiful to him. He has to bite you to make sure you're real.
I love that. Well, you have a lot of interesting ways that the cultures are they both, they're endearing to the cultures, but you know, also it's funny, you know, because you can parallel a lot of the things that are happening and, you know, laugh along with what's happening to President Unger in relation to how things happen, you know, here in our world as well, you know, because we go to different
right.
cultures, see different things. And I think that's one of the interesting stories that you tell but you don't really tell. It's like, you know, you're trying to tell a nice story that has a good ending to it, but you want to teach a lesson along the way. And I think you're a lesson teacher because you do it so I'm going to use the word slyly, but I don't like that because it has L's in it, and I can't say that five times fast. But you do it very discreetly where, you know, you're able to, you know, teach that lesson in a fun way that you don't really get that you are being taught until long after that. And then you go, oh, I could see how this could apply somewhere else. And so you're teaching me a lot as I'm reading through your books.
Well, actually, my characters are teaching you. A lot of my characters are much smarter than I am in that way. They, I'll read over something I've written and I'll go, wow, you know, that's so, you know, different, that's so special, that's so interesting, that's so exciting to know that's the direction they're going in. But I don't even feel like it came from me, you know, when I write about it. We recently did a song together, Garrett, and that song did not come from me. It came from my character. And that is what I attribute it to. I let my characters free to tell me what they're willing to do, what they want to do. And,
I think, when book three comes out and you have, you know, your book trailer ready and all of that, and we can actually release the song, we'll play it here, and we'll play it forever right here on the show. So we can't play it today, but I will say, Kathy wrote a great song, and she set up the story. Do you want to tell how that all came about and then how we started working together on that?
Okay, well, on planet Noor, we have over 500,000 humans that have been taken there. They've been in captive there for over a year. And John Mann is longing to return home to Earth. He's a musician, or was a musician at one time on Earth, and a song came to him. And he wrote the song and sang it, and it soon became, in Pyramid City on Noor, a very, very well-known song. Now he's working with hundreds of other people in a huge staging area, a space dock in the city, where they're putting all the supplies that they need to take onto the transport vessel to take their flight home. And he's very excited about going home, and he starts singing the song Mother Earth Anthem, which he wrote. And he just begins to sing it by himself. He picks up an acoustic guitar and starts singing it, and suddenly all the other people in the space dock start joining in because they've heard the song so often now. It's been played over and over again in the city sound system, and they are just getting excited about returning home. And it's a very touching, longing song. Anyway, I told you about the song when we were at the Southern California Writers Conference.
And wasn't that a fun event?
It was a wonderful event. I had so much fun there. And it was like a magic moment, though, when I came over to you, and for some reason I thought, I have to tell Gera about my song. And you jumped right on board.
Well, it just sounded like such a fun thing to do. It's like, you know, who sings a song for a book? Everybody sings songs for the James Bond movie or this movie or that movie, but who sings a song for a book? Nobody. This sounds like a first.
Mm-hmm. And so this will be, this song that you have helped me create will be the background of the book trailer that will come out. And anybody can see my book trailers on my website, greyguardians.com.
And just so everybody knows, we are doing this show live on what we call a Cyber Monday. So I'm going to be a big fan of supporting any independent, instead of, you know, supporting, you know, just Amazon or Best Buy or whatever, and I don't have anything against them, I'm really going to ask you to support independent authors, musicians, screenwriters, filmmakers, anybody who is an independent whatever today. But more importantly, because we have Kathy on the show, I'm going to ask you to support Kathy's books. Where do you prefer people buy your books, Kathy?
On Amazon. Amazon's the easiest way to get them. Mm-hmm.
And with that, I've put a link up to Kathy's author's page on Amazon right here on the show page. It says, buy Kathy's books on Amazon here. You click here, and it's going to take you right to Amazon. And all you got to do is go click, click, and buy your books. And then you're going to have two fantastic science fiction books that you're going to totally fall in love with. You know, and not to keep harping on the fact that you really have strong women characters, but they're strong, relatable women that you just see them as everyday people who are put into extraordinary circumstances and rise to, you know, the things that are going on. So, you know, going back to your first book, Earth's Ultimate Conflict, can you tell us a little bit about that story? And then as we get ready to hit the top of the hour, we're going to take a quick commercial break and hear from our friends at It Matters Radio and our friends at Rainbow Brew. And then we're going to come back and talk in more detail about Escape from Noor and all of the wild things that are happening in book two of your series, as well as, you know, what we can expect in book three and in the future for the rest of that particular, I call it a program, but is it an anthology at that point, or is that, what's the right word to use, Kathy?
Well, I guess it's a series. It's
a series. There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm coming to you for my words.
Okay,
so in
Earth's
Ultimate Conflict, tell us about the some of the female characters that we're going to meet in there, and why do you think readers relate so well to them? Because you're now an award-winning author. You've won several awards for the different books.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I talk about that as well.
Okay, well, Earth's Ultimate Conflict, I start out in with a woman who is actually a hairdresser, and her husband is a police detective. And she has a child, just one child, Griffin. She has drawn strength from the fact that she came up to the system. She was never adopted, and she ended up having to make her way in life on her own and ultimately put together a hair salon. She suddenly found herself as she, after, you know, years of feeling alone, found herself with a wonderful man, Matt McCarthy. They have a child, and she suddenly discovers she's one of the first victims of what's called, it's called SEAS for short, but it's Severe Environmental Allergy Syndrome. This is a pandemic that's going worldwide. I decided to try a pandemic that was an allergy instead of a bacterial or a something viral which a lot of people have used in other books, but a real allergy instead, which all of us can relate to because all of us have an allergy or two in our life.
Sure.
I have President Barbara Unger, first president that's female. And she is a very strong woman. She has drawn, she drew support from both parties, really, and from both her ex-husband's families. They still supported her. She remained very good friends with her first husband and made him eventually the Secretary of Defense, which, considering that she was twice divorced, and still single, she made it into the White House, which is kind of an unusual stunt to pull off. You know, but things are changing, obviously, in the near future. Also, I have Rosa DeAngelo, a young wife of a construction, a man who has a construction business. She works for an attorney in Endicott, New York, and she is having difficulty having children. She's having difficulty conceiving. And this woman becomes also one of the victims of severe environmental allergy syndrome. They find themselves captive in biotents because they have to be separated from the general public. Since nobody really knows for sure if it's just an allergy or maybe it has to do with the fact that they've had contact with aliens, since now we have aliens presenting themselves. The book takes place in the near future where a worldwide pandemic, increased seismic activity, and global warming are all linked to aliens. We're being manipulated. So consequently, no one really knows what's going on. And keeping these victims away from the general public seems to be the best mode of defense right now. The women prove to be stronger than they ever expected they could be. And I believe that President Barbara Unger leads the country the best she can under really dire circumstances. But she's pulling things off that I don't think a man could pull off.
Well, you know, one of the things like that I really like about President Unger is the fact that, you know, she is strong, but not in what I would call an offensive way. You know those people that just come into the room and they kind of elephant or boulder way into the room and you're like, ugh.
Right.
You again, type of a deal. And that's not her. And you see a great leader in her, you know, and how she has the relationship with her ex-husband, which I thought was fascinating. You made him the Secretary of Defense. But, you know, when you tell the story, it makes perfect sense that he's the logical choice for this.
Right. They continue to love each other and understand each other, even though they could not remain married.
Yeah, and I think that is in itself is telling of a great leader right there. You know, you put your personal differences aside and look for, you know, the best candidate for, you know, the job that's out there. Now, one of the things, you know, you talked about this is, you know, the acronyms that you pick out for, you know, like the either the agencies or the afflictions and things like that. And I will tell you that one of the things that I do have difficulty in book number two, because we start talking about it a whole lot more, is it the OETCC?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so every time I see that, I say it aloud, you know, as I'm reading it, the OETCC, so I can make sure that I'm saying the agency the right way, because I just keep knowing that I'm not saying it the correct way. But I have to say that, otherwise I'm losing track of, you know, the importance
right.
of what that agency does.
The Office of Extraterrestrial Command and Control.
How did you come up with such a wild name for that? You know, because we have it, because the name for it quite appropriate, but at the same time, you know, it's not like FBI or CIA, which are so simple by comparison.
Right. Well, usually when I was thinking about it, usually when you have a new agency, it starts out with something about office, you know.
Yep.
So I thought I would have to use that. And it just seemed appropriate to use ET in it, since that's what they were going to keep track of. And command and control just kind of came to me also. It's Office of the Office of Extraterrestrial Command and Control. Although it's a mouthful, it just states exactly what it is. And I thought I wanted to keep it really clean. So when you heard it, you knew what it was.
Yeah, and you absolutely do. I think this is a great time. We're halfway through the show. I can't believe it. We're here with best-selling author Kathy Porter. She's talking about her first book, Earth's Ultimate Conflict, and her new book, Escape from Noor. And you can buy her books on Amazon today. We're going to take a quick break to hear from It Matters Radio and Rainbow Brew. We'll be right back in about 2.5 minutes. So sit back, get a cup of Rainbow Brew coffee or another beverage of your choice, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to our discussion of It Matters Radio. Our guest today is Angus McWilliams.
Hey, laddie, let's get on with this thing. I'm on my way to a birthday party for Nessie.
You're throwing a birthday party for the Loch Ness Monster?
Well, first of all, it's not a monster. And second of all, I'm talking about niece Nessie. She's a wee bit of a lovely lass.
I see. Well, okay. Angus, can you give us your thoughts on It Matters Radio?
I wonder how people... They had me on a while back to talk about my book.
Your what?
My book. I wrote a book about the adventures in Scotland.
Oh, I see. A book.
That's what I just said. What are you, a deaf man?
It Matters Radio focuses on discovering new talent and bringing important indie artists on the air. Monica, Kenneth, and Carrie offer up meaningful conversation on new music, books, and fun topics. It's unlike any other radio program known to man and woman alike.
You can say that again.
Known to man and woman alike.
Just because I said you can say it again doesn't mean you have to say it again.
I'm just doing my best to show everyone that It Matters Radio basically brings variety, fun, and entertainment with a sincere desire to discover new topics and talent.
Why didn't you just say that?
I just did.
Hey, Letty, remind me when I can listen.
It Matters Radio is on every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
You Americans with your different time zones. We only have one time zone in Scotland.
And that would be...
That would be the time to down a pint or two of ale.
It Matters Radio, for the best in conversation, music, books, and entertainment. Join us Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
That's a mouthful if I have a hard one.
Yes, and I'm going to go brush my teeth now. It Matters Radio.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM 950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the Queen Bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
I love the people at Rainbow Brew. They're out of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and when they approached me to be a sponsor here on the program, I said, that's great. I'd love to have you as a sponsor, but you make coffee out of Minneapolis. You know, who's going to buy coffee there? And they said, we ship worldwide. And you're not going to believe how great our coffee tastes. And I said, you know, unless it's like Colombian coffee and we see Juan Valdez packing up the hills with, you know, the coffee beans, I'm just not sure I'm going to buy it. So they sent me some. And I'm not kidding you. Fantastic flavors. And their customer service is great. If you are interested in buying some Rainbow Brew, if you go and like their Facebook fan page or their business page, you know, they know how that works, like it. You can get $1 off coupons, or they have other offers that they offer periodically. And if you go and order and tell them you heard them here on Rated G Radio, they will actually do a happy dance in their coffee shop in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And they send their eternal thanks every time that you support small business, which they are. So since it's Cyber Monday, support a small business in your community or around the world, because now you can. But today, we want to have you all go out to Amazon and buy Kathy Porter's books. There's a link conveniently placed on the show page for you to just click here and then go buy both of them. And with the holidays fast approaching, I'm a big fan of buying 10 of each, because you keep one for yourself and give 9 away. Because, you know, they're companion pieces. You can't stop with one. You know, you give 9 away as gifts, and you'll get many thanks in return, I will guarantee it. So, Kathy, we've been talking about your first book, Earth's Ultimate Conflict. I'd love to go back into the series now and talk about what's happening here as we pick up in book number 2, because it really is a continuation of, you know, the story that ended the first book. So what happens
right
where we're at as we start the journey with Escape from Noor?
Well, I'll give you a nice quick synopsis.
It's
a year later, over 500,000 humans have been abducted. They've been taken to the Grays home planet, Noor, and they were used as lab rats. Their ultimate purpose was to create a superior hybrid race that the Grays intended to repopulate their planet. Unfortunately, the experiments have failed, and the humans actually are no longer needed, and now they have been abandoned on a foreign planet. They're afraid, and they have no way of contacting Earth. So that's their fate right now, and they're just awaiting what's going to happen to them. You know, they don't know if the Grays have completely abandoned them. They know they can be, they have already left people to die on Earth, and so their own species, so they're very frightened of what could happen to them. Rosa launches a possible escape plan. However, the Jaw race from a nearby planet have come to warn them that the Noorians, who are the actual original inhabitants of the planet, who avoided the scientific experiment that mutated the Grays to the subspecies they are now, intend to come out of asylum. They've been hiding for over 100 years, and they intend to annihilate anyone other than themselves that's on the planet. They want to take over their planet again and make it the magnificent planet it once was. So, you know, the humans are in the path of a possible civil war. So they're going to have to make a choice. Am I going to side with the Grays, who are our captors, or am I going to befriend the Noorians and possibly find an escape home? So they really don't know who to trust.
And one of the things that has happened to the humans once they got to the planet, I think was a little unexpected for the Grays, the humans started to adapt very well.
Yes. The Grays are basically afraid of humans. They know that humans have often, in their history, won what should have failed. And they know that their desire for freedom is far greater than any desire they have left. You know, they're a subspecies. They know they're a dying race. Their only purpose right now is to find another race that they create to inhabit their planet. And so bringing these 500,000 humans to their planet is kind of frightening to them, because they know the strength of the human desire for freedom and what it can bring. So they have given them certain freedoms to keep them happy. And consequently, humanity does what they do best. They created a society. They created businesses. They created new goods to buy and sell. They created new foods that they had never tasted before on planet Noor. And so it's kind of all a spectacular change that both frightens them and intrigues the Grays.
And I think that to me, speaks volumes for a lot of things that happen here on Earth. So, you know, the different societies and different things that take place. But I really found it quite fascinating. And I love that that's where we find these humans, all 500,000 of them, creating this fantastic, dynamic, brand-new economy where, you know, there are jobs that are either assigned to you, or you can go be a creative person and you can, you know, make music or paint or do whatever it is that you want to do. And it's kind of like, well, you know, what do you want to do in your life? And let's have you do that and be happy and be successful at it.
Right. They found their normality.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
How important in a crazy world like that is it that normality comes when you are finally transported, you know, light years away, and you're in a world that is so foreign to you, and now your life is normal.
Right. They found a way to make, keep in mind, they have lots of children with them, too. So they, you know, especially the women will strive to try and make something normal, you know. And many of these women that were taken, they were taken because they were of child birthing age, and hopefully their DNA would yield a race of children, so we still have lots of women there. The only new births, though, on the planet are human births. So,
and that's something that didn't really even occur to me while reading this here, Kathy, is that, you know, that you are talking about women of child, you know, bearing age. It's not like President Unger, who, you know, those days have passed for her, and,
right.
you know, here she is, the leader of the free world, literally. And she, you know, she's, you know, leading the charge, a very strong personality, and, it, you know, fantastic negotiations with the intergalactic councils and all of these different races that are coming about. But I never once thought about the fact that really it's President Unger and the Secretary of Defense are the old fogies here.
Right. Right. And isn't that like now?
Well, you know, kind of is, but, you know, I never really thought of it in those terms. So, you know, this book not only has, you know, great appeal, you know, cause I guess, you know, when I am so invested in these characters that you write about, you know, especially Rosa, you know, you just, you know, I think you just kind of lose track of the birthday calendar of, you know, how old these people are. You know, you're just like, okay, what's going to be happening next? But, you know, these are young, strong, dynamic characters that are really out making a difference wherever they're at. So
Rosa seems to appeal to just about everyone, I think. She's young. She's willing to make mistakes. She's willing to try her hardest to make things better. And she's not afraid of the mistakes she's making. But she also has this enormous heart and the ability to identify and care about aliens. Even though, in a way, they are her enemy, she understands that they are in deep pain, in deep need of aid. Then they're just doing everything completely wrong to get it.
Well, and Rose is also in a particular predicament because she also has a special talent, and then I'd say you just have to read the book to figure out what that is, but I think that Rosa, you know, may have, you know, landed in the position that she's in just simply because of certain things that ended up happening and, you know, certain abilities that she now has. And I haven't gotten to the end of book two, so don't tell me what happens, but
I won't.
There is a book three that you're almost finished with, and that will be out sometime in 2016. When you sat down to do this, and I know that we've talked about this a little bit before, but I love hearing it, and I pick something new up every time, you know, we talk about this. You know, you sat down, you know, with your husband and said, boy, I wish somebody would write a book, you know, that I'd like to read. And he says, well, if you want to do that, you got to write it yourself. You tell the story much better, so I apologize. But in doing so, you know, you wrote the book, and then you said, you know, but this is going to be a series. It's not just going to be, okay, it's Kathy Porter, I wanted to write a book, now I can check that off the bucket list. You know, do you have your end game yet for your series? Have you figured out how many books you're going to have?
Garrett, this is so strange to tell you, but when I had that dream that caused this entire series, I thought I was writing one book. Because I knew the beginning and I know the end. Okay? Well, as I'm writing Earth's Ultimate Conflict, and I'm getting near, you know, 350 pages at the time, and I'm like, there is no way I'm ever going to get to the end of this story. So I said, I guess there's going to be another book. And so I really started finishing the book with that in mind, okay? And so Earth's Ultimate Conflict then worked into Escape from N'or. And now I'm in the process of writing The Journey, which is the third book in this series. And I have a book four and book five, book six, book seven, and book eight. And what I finally did was I sat down and said, there has to be a beginning and end to each of the books. They each have to stand alone on their own. You don't have to have read the first book to understand book three or book five. So I decided I'd have to plan it out a little bit more, but I didn't have a lot to go on other than the fact that I knew basically what was supposed to happen and took a pretty good guess at how long it would take me to tell that part of the story. So that's how I figured out it was going to be 8 books. And book 4 will be called Reversal of Prey. And book 5 is The Grey's Return. Book 6 is We Once Belonged. And book 7 will be The Guardians. And book 8, The Truce. So,
I just got goosebumps.
It all came like that. I literally have one line about each of the books. That's how I laid it out. And I wrote one sentence that would tell me what this particular book will be about. But it's kind of hard to explain this, but I have written several chapters that don't belong in book 3 at all. So I, like, okay, this chapter actually is going to be in book 4. Mm-hmm. I don't write chronologically sometimes. If something comes to me, I have to write it. So I go ahead and I write it right away, and I'm like, okay, but this has no place in book 3. That happens when in book 4 when such and such happens. So I'll put that aside and, have it just dangling out there till I get to book 4 or 5, wherever it belongs. But literally, I know the storyline. It was hard for me to comprehend this at first, that I really had such a long saga in my head. But if you ask me what's happening in book 7, I can tell you I know exactly what it's going to be. I just haven't written it yet.
Well, this is a great time to spend a couple of minutes, because I want to spend the last, 10 minutes of the show talking business with you, the business of being a writer. But this always brings me to an interesting point that I'm fascinated, because every writer that comes on the show is 100% different from everybody else. No two people have the same method, and I'm fascinated by that, because, if you are going to, do accounting, you balance the books the same way every single time. If you're going to do, something else, a nurse, you're going to give a shot the same way every single time. When you're a writer, there's no set standard for what is normal, what's acceptable, what should be, what shouldn't be. When do you find time to write, and how do you make that a priority in your life now that this is a career that you're being successful in?
That's probably the hardest part of writing, is finding the time to put your butt in the chair and write, because life happens, okay? Sometimes I'll only get to write for 15 minutes, and sometimes I'll have a whole 45 minutes in a day, and sometimes I'll stay up till 1 in the morning and write 3 hours. But it's just all different. I don't have a set time. And I have a particular talent, though, that I call it my talent, and that is that when I sit down to write, there's never any hesitation. I do a little meditation, and a little prayer even. I have this little prayer that I say, and I just put my fingers on the keyboard, and I have, this is what I do routinely, actually. I leave off my last writing session in the middle of a sentence. I do not complete that last sentence that I am writing. And that helps me just go gangbusters in the limited amount of time I have. I read that last paragraph to that last partial sentence, and I take off from there. I complete the sentence and go on.
I love that.
I wish I could
do that with a lot of things in life.
Well, I can't do that with everything, but I do that with my writing. It seems to just stimulate me that. And oftentimes what I think the rest of that sentence is going to be when I leave it, actually the next day it's a little bit longer sentence, maybe, or a little bit more concise. So I have a starting point that has already, how sometimes, because I know you do some writing, Garrett, sometimes when you have something gelled in your mind that you want to write about, okay, and you're getting ready to write it, but you have limited time and you've got to leave it. If you complete that sentence or if you complete that paragraph, okay, then you have to start totally fresh on a new paragraph.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if I leave something partially done, I have that satisfaction of finishing up and going on. There was no hesitation. There's no stalling. There's no thinking about what's next.
I like
that
idea.
Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. And see, you know, when I sit down to write, you know, I wrote this morning, you know, and I just woke up and I had to do it. And it wasn't like I wasn't even allowed to turn my iPad on, you know, because I've been without my computer. I left my iPad off. I didn't even go get my cup of coffee. I just made sure I had light to see. And I got out my red pen and my notebook and I wrote for, you know, I don't know, 3-4 pages, something like that. But I said, I've got to do this now. If I wait 5 more minutes, it's the moment will have passed. But I'm one where I have to finish that paragraph, and if I don't have a complete paragraph, I'm writing until it's done, to the detriment of whatever else is going on around me. And I think that you allow yourself a lot of freedom in being creative and saying, okay, I'm going to end with this word, and we're going to pick it up tomorrow or whenever you get back to it. I think that's really cool. I'm going to have to try that. I'm going to roll the dice and see how that works. So, okay, Kathy, we've had you on for almost an hour, which I can't even believe because I just keep you on and talk about your books all day. But one thing that I would really like to visit with you about is the fact that as a writer, one of the things that we really have to, you know, look at is the fact that this is a business, and it's one of those things that, you know, magically that, you know, books don't sell themselves. Magically, your book doesn't get published. Magically, you know, things like so what has been your experience as a writer to get your books in print and on Amazon and all of that? And what have you enjoyed most about that, and what have you hated?
Well, I guess I hated the beginning of my writing career because I chose the wrong I started with a POD when POD was not popular. It was one of the original PODs, and it was a huge mistake, and it made
my book
way too expensive. Oh, thank you. Print on demand.
Oh, okay.
Which is exactly what CreateSpace is now. Okay, but I started out with one that was kind of like, you know, one of the originals and wasn't accepted in bookstores yet, and it just didn't work out. And so I had to take my business away from them, and I kind of went from, you know, the expression from the frying pan into the fire.
Yep.
So then I got picked up by a small company, a small printing company, and we started out with a good relationship, but then things started going wrong. For instance, I would be out selling books like crazy, and I'm signing, you know, I kept track of all the books I sold. I sold nearly 2,000 books, and I don't know what accounting they had because they never gave me accounting of how many books they sold. Okay, so I felt like they were not actively doing anything but living off my sales on for my books. So in the end, I had to get an attorney to sever the agreement, and I never got my money because he felt it was more, the attorney rightly so, felt it was more important for me to go for my rights than for the money. We could fight forever for the money, but they would probably give up the rights easily if they knew I was ready to fight them, which
wow.
they did. Which they did. And I'm not the first author to go through this, Garrett. So many authors have been through this terrible ordeal. So I really strongly recommend all authors look at predators and editors online before you decide on anyone. But also have the strength of belief in yourself to go it alone. To go ahead and do CreateSpace or go ahead and do Kindle or BookBaby or anybody that you feel confident enough to do it on your own, because these publishing companies aren't going to do anything more for you than publish your book. You still have to market on your own. That's your deal. That's your lot in life. It's a business. You have a product, and you have to sell it.
Was that surprising to you as a writer, thinking that, okay, now I've written the book, the rest will just take care of itself?
Oh, yes. I was you know, I was that kind of author. I just thought, oh, I wrote this wonderful book, put it on the shelf, it's going to sell. And I couldn't have been more wrong. And I had to go out there and I had to sell it on my own. And it's kind of grueling at first until you get used to it. And I was a little bit shy at first talking about my own book. Not that I couldn't speak publicly, but this is something you wrote of your inner thoughts, and I write about aliens, you know? So it was kind of hard for me to get out there in public and talk in front of people who knew me as a PE kindergarten teacher, and now I'm here writing about aliens. Do you see the correlation there, Gary?
No. But it makes a great talking point, you know?
Right. But I do have one really strong piece of advice for all authors, and that's that not everyone will like your writing or your genre. You may face enormous challenges that will slow you down, like I did. You know, the wrong publisher, whatever. Don't let that stop you. The first person you need to believe in is you.
When you went through the ordeal with the, you know, the first publisher that, you know, kept all your money and, you know, did nefarious things, you know, what kind of investigation did you go through to, you know, change that relationship and look for a different publisher that you could work with again?
Well, to be honest with you, that really tainted me on publishers.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that.
How could it not, you know?
I didn't think anybody could be that way. And then I went online and I looked up other authors, and I found the site Predators and Editors, and I found out other authors were having enormous issues like that. I also noticed that some very well-known authors were taking their work from their publishers that they'd been with for years, and they're publishing on their own. And I really realized that, you know, they're not getting what they want from their publishers. And they're the big guys.
Yeah.
You know, so I decided that's it. I'm going to go. I'm going to try it on my own. And I've been doing very well on my own, winning awards, you know, and Earth's Ultimate Conflict has won 4 awards to date.
Oh, my gosh.
The cover needs to be updated. And I've got 2 awards on Escape from Nur so far, but I expect more. I also have, book 3 coming up, and I really, you know, there's this angst that most authors have where while you're writing, you're like, oh, my God, is this going to be good as the last book? Can I pull that excitement off again? Can I pull that suspense off again? Can I pull that love off again? And then you hit a point where you're writing where you go, oh, wow. This is better than I thought. You know, this is really going good. and you get really excited about it. And then you have people read your book and say, wow, I really like this book. Book 2 is better than book 1 even, and I was enamored by book 1. Well, I'm in love with book 3. It has so many different aspects to it that are happening on Earth as well as on Nur. And when I started, they weren't happening here, so it really concerns me a little. But, you know, I delve into different aspects, deeper into DNA and the uses of DNA and how they can be used for very dangerous, DNA can be used for very dangerous purposes. So it's constantly, you know, it's constantly driving me forward in the book, the excitement of it. It's a very exciting book. Each book, however, and I think we talked about this the other day, I have a chapter that is particularly difficult for me to get through. I usually cry while I'm writing it, and then when I go back to try and deal with it, I'll cry if I want to edit it.
And that's going to be an Escape from Nur, correct?
Escape from Nur.
And with that, Kathy,
there was a you've got to go.
the show's going to end in about 30 seconds, so I just don't want to have the listeners go, what happened? But this is the catch. You got to go buy Escape from New York. Go buy it on Amazon today, folks. There's a link to buy Kathy's books right here on the show page. Please go support independent writers, authors, musicians, filmmakers, anybody who does things on their own. Today's Cyber Monday. Spend your money out there in the world and help people like Kathy become even bigger best-selling authors on their own and put some of that money into their own pockets and help them be creative souls. Kathy, it's been a pleasure. Have a happy, happy holiday. Hope to see you soon.
Happy
we'll
holiday.
Talk more about the music. And everybody, we're going to be back tomorrow with more Rated G Radio. Don't drive distracted. Thanks for being here today, everybody. Take care.
You've been listening to
Rated
G Radio.